Welcome to On Tour with Sport 24. I'm Emma Saunders, and this is your guide to the world's most iconic sporting cities. Each episode, we'll be heading to a different part of the world to give you an inside view into what makes it a sporting city. We're going to find out what the locals recommend to get a real flavour of its sports and culture, and what you should experience when you come to visit. It's what Sport 24 is all about, a sports channel that connects onboard passengers to those unmissable live sporting moments. So, whether you're flying at 35,000 feet or relaxing on your ocean cruise, you can be watching the game live. Sounds like the only way to travel. So buckle up and sit back. You're listening to On Tour with Sport 24.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Sport 24, we'd like to welcome you to London.
Yes, welcome to London, and for this episode we find ourselves a very special location to be recording. We are so excited to say, despite the backtrack of pouring rain you may be able to hear in the background, we are surrounded by the green grass and strawberries and cream of the All England Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club, the home of Wimbledon Tennis Championships. As always, we've got our TikToker travel extraordinaire, Rob Adcock, with us. And Rob, I'm sure we had to really twist your arm to be here for this one, didn't we?
I was like, yeah, I'm sure I can make that work. We can make that one work.
But what about this, looking around at Wimbledon, yeah. The iconic SW19, eh?
I'd never been before, and I don't know what I was expecting, but it's so much bigger than I was expecting. Because obviously, for the 2 weeks that it's on, it's everywhere, isn't it? You can't help but see it, because it's like everywhere in the United Kingdom. And the first time I walked through the doors, I was expecting it to be big. I was expecting to see loads of things going on. But it's just like, it's amazing.
People really make a day of it when they come to Wimbledon, whether they're in the queue at the crack of dawn or they've already won tickets in the ballot. There's always something to take in. Despite the weather, I've mentioned already, it is pouring down here, keeping in with the British tradition of watching tennis. Across the fortnight, there's usually always one day like this. But even in your rain, Mac, with your brolly, there's still lots of fun to be had, right?
What I love is the fact that people could be listening to this anywhere in the world. They could be flying over deserts, they could be flying over wherever it is. But just know, at this moment in time, it couldn't be raining much more than it is now. And the best thing about where we're standing at the moment is, you can see all the things that you've heard about over the years. Like, if you've grown up in the United Kingdom, you hear about centre court, you hear about the outside courts, you hear about the rain covers, you hear about all those massive things that happened in sporting history here, and you look around and you can see it all like there, that's Hendon Hill.
Yeah, it's right there in HD, and despite the rain, there's hundreds of umbrellas out there. I mean, that's the one thing, actually two things we're known for, queuing here at Wimbledon, they can do that, and sitting and sucking it all up in the rain, that's what us Brits that do best. And the Pim's on the hill, the tent still looks very busy, lots of people still laying out their picnic baskets and just taking it all in on the big screen, which is on the outside of the number one court. We are here anchored in SW19, but we're going to be talking about sport across the English capital, aren't we? And that there's so much for us to get our teeth into.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be one of those things where some of the places that we've been to in the past, we've talked about Miami, we've talked about Madrid, we've talked about Melbourne, whereas this one is very much a subject that's close to both our hearts, and you can do it off the top of your head, you know exactly what's going on. And I think one of the things that we are going to talk about later on is, of course, the football, which is a subject close to both of our hearts, and there's definitely plenty of that in London.
Yes, so we're going to start right here and begin by taking you on a tour of SW19, because when you speak about London as a sporting capital, Wimbledon is right at the very centre of the conversation. And here to help us do that is sport broadcaster Lindsay Hooper.
Hello,
welcome.
Emma.
London, it really is one of those cities. It's something to offer for everybody that's visiting here. If you're a sporting nut, this is the place to be, right? I mean, what's your favourite sporting things to do?
Well, I love going for runs. So I used to be a cross-country runner when I was younger. I went to Loughborough University, which is not in London. That's more in the Midlands area. But the runs that you can do in London, some of the national parks, I think that's what a lot of tourists say when they come to London, is they can't believe Richmond Park, for instance, Bushey Park, which I used to live near to when I lived in Hampton in West London, Hyde Park, all of those areas. We've got so much greenery in a city. I think it's really exquisite, actually, and very rare that you find that in such a populated area. So I used to love going on runs, Emma, through woods like that. I'd go on 10K, 15K runs. I love playing squash and tennis. Not on days like this. Well, squash isn't so bad because it's indoors, but certainly not the tennis on days like this. Playing football. I played on some what we'd call scrubs in Wandsworth area. I used to play down there for Wandsworth Ladies. And, I mean, it was just any pitch will do, effectively. So the pitch that you'll see on TV screens around the world at Wembley when that's hosting showcase occasions and it looks like a snooker table, just so smooth. Just imagine the opposite. And that's what I've been kicking a football on occasionally. So, yeah.
It's true what you're saying, though. You know, the green grass, it extends far further than Wimbledon, doesn't it, in London, which isn't something you always associate with a city like ours. However, we will be talking about football, as you've mentioned there. But Wimbledon will be playing a prominent role throughout this episode. After all, it is the oldest tennis tournament in the world and is widely regarded as the most prestigious, having been held since 1877. Can you believe it? And of course, you can watch it all on Sport 24. We will take you on a bit of a guided tour of these beautiful grounds, and we're going to be starting on the famous hill, known to many as Henman Hill, or others as Murray Mound. I'm not sure that rolls off the tongue as easily. I was here a few years ago and it was Conticliffe. I'm not sure what other variations. Katie Balter's doing quite well. Maybe Balter Bank, I don't know. But still, as I've mentioned already, despite the rain, people haven't been deterred whatsoever. It's always got quite some atmosphere. But Lindsay, in the summer, you know, when the champagne's flowing, everyone's got their strawberries and cream, the picnic blankets, the atmosphere out there when you're working as a reporter must be quite something.
I've met a gentleman just today, actually, who's been camping out and he does it every year for the last 25 years for a whole week. And he manages to get into Wimbledon, get one of the guest passes, then trade a few tickets. He's managed to see everyone from Djokovic to Nadal to Serena Williams and Venus over the years, and he's done that just on a whim, coming down and being in his camper van. So that it's also very much about coming and experiencing, and we know that Wimbledon is one that a lot of people have on their bucket lists, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've been talking awful lot so far about the fan experience, but let's hear now about what it's like to play at Wimbledon. With us we have former American international tennis player Jill Krabas and broadcaster Peter Mercato as well. We've been talking about the atmosphere here at Wimbledon, and if you're a player and you can really sort of charge it in the right way, I imagine it goes an awful way, doesn't it?
It's actually really tough to explain, because every time I come back into the facility or the venue, it's amazing every time. It has such a special feel to it, and being able to walk out on center court and play here is just one of the best experiences ever. I remember when I first walked on center court, I actually started crying as I was walking out, and I was like, oh my god, I'm supposed to cry after the match, not before. But it was just an overwhelming experience. I loved every moment, and I'm really grateful that I got to experience that.
Yeah, well, Peter, I imagine it's probably the same in the commentary box as well. It must get a little emotional at times.
The experience, or the privilege of actually flying all the way over from Australia and being here and being part of history and seeing history unfold and all the years that have gone by as well, and then waiting for that next big moment to come up, you do feel like you're walking on the grounds of somewhere that just, you know, connects everyone in terms of the sport too. So yeah, it's wonderful, and there's so many great highlights, not just on centre court, but obviously around the grounds as well.
Yeah, I mean, you guys know the tennis circuit inside out across the globe. But what makes Wimbledon stand out? What makes it that little bit different?
Actually, it's interesting, because we were just talking about that when we were commentating a match, because everyone always asks me what my favorite slam is. And it's hard to put any in order, because they all have something unique and special about them. And for Wimbledon, it's about the tradition and the history. And everything is so pristine. I mean, every time I walk in here, and I get the privilege of walking in before play has started, which I feel like that quiet before everything starts is so special, and every flower is like in perfect place. I don't know how they do it, but it's just immaculate. And just to have that feeling and that quietness before, I think is what stands out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that, you know, for 2 weeks out of the year that we get access to this place as well, whereas the rest of the time you've got to be a member or have won the tournament, which I'm never going to do, clearly. But to get the chance to sort of roam around the grounds, and they put it together so well. And the fact that you are walking around somewhere that has 100 plus years of history too, and how it's built up over the years, and how the sport's pretty much grown around it too, and the sense of tradition of playing on grass, because we don't get that too often on the tour these days either.
Yeah. And Jill, we can't have you here without talking about your specific experiences of playing at Wimbledon, knocking out a certain Serena Williams.
Yes, who? That was a long time
who?
Ago.
Who?
That was one of the best moments, obviously, in my career. I was actually scheduled to play on center court, and I got moved to court two then, which was considered the graveyard court. Now it's court three, so everything has changed. But now Bannion and Murray were taking a very long time on center court, so court two opened up, so I got moved. Now, maybe that helped me, I don't know. But then in the middle of the match, Murray and Nalbandian finished, and there was this flood of people that came out on court two, and I was overwhelmed by, all of a sudden, a packed house. I was the last match playing, and it was just an incredible atmosphere. And I always tell people the one moment that stood out. I played this really long point, and I ended up losing the point, and the crowd went absolutely nuts. And I just thought, and I lost the point, and I just remember thinking, this is what I play for. And I lost the point. And I was like, that's where I knew I was in a good place. So everything worked out well for me that day. I ended up losing to Venus next round, but that's okay.
We don't need to mention that
bit.
The other thing as well, we were talking about what we can see from the grounds. You know, you can weave your way through the outside courts out there, Henman Hill, the show courts, as we've mentioned. But I think another thing that makes Wimbledon so special is the locker room. Now, of course, we've never seen that. So we're relying on your eyes here to tell us what it looks like inside.
Well, am I allowed to reveal that if you're not allowed to see it?
Absolutely. Yes. You're not playing anymore.
Well, there are actually two separate locker rooms. So the top players get to have a different set of locker rooms that are up a level. And so most of the locker rooms from the majority of the players are on the very ground floor where, I mean, it's nice. We have access to everything down there. The gym is down there. The physios are down there. The doctors, the massage therapists. So everything is very orderly and in one place. But the locker rooms in particular, I mean, they're nicely done. I think everyone has their own space. Everyone gets to come and, like, as soon as you're first there, you get to choose what locker you want, what section you want to go to. But it's nice, and we have the locker room attendants that are there almost every second of the day, that if there's anything that we need, they're just on there for us, and they've been so spectacular every single year.
Listen, you mentioned it there. You've still got plenty to do this afternoon. So, Peter, Jill, thank you so much for your company, but we will let you go.
Thank you.
Well, one man who is very familiar with this place is two-time British champion Andy Murray. He's been speaking with Kenzie Benali.
Andy, great to see you. It must feel pretty special being here 10 years since your first Wimbledon title.
Yeah, brilliant. To be back. Yeah, feels like a lot's happened in that time. But yeah, it was obviously amazing. Amazing tournament for me. Great memories. And good to be back for another year.
And Andy, of course, we're chatting from the beautiful American Express card members lounge. There's so many beauty spots around Wimbledon. Do you have a favourite spot around the grounds?
That's a good question. It depends, really, during the tournament, or I'm a member at Wimbledon, so I can come here and use the facilities during the year. So they've got a games room here,
really?
which got like snooker, table tennis, darts, that sort of stuff.
See, this is the things we don't get
to
see.
Exactly. Yeah, and obviously, yeah, when the tournament's on, that's not there. So I've played in like the snooker club championships and those sorts of things.
Wow.
The games room probably, and then during the tournament for me. Probably quite an obvious one, but being like on center court, I mean, it's obviously a huge privilege to get to, you know, play on that court. It's huge history and tradition there, and then amazing support and all of that sort of stuff. So during the tournament, I like being there.
What about the way you prepare for matches? Is there anything in particular you do before you walk out onto court?
My preparations over the years haven't changed loads. I mean, they have a an underground gym that we use to do all of our movement preparations and everything. So I'm always down there with my team, kind of watching the TVs to see, you know, when it's time to go. And then, yeah, you know, you're at the beginning of the tournament, you're down there with, like, it's quite hectic down there, like with 30, 40 other players kind of all warming up, getting ready for the matches at the same time. So it's not the most relaxing place to be. Always a few nerves as well. So, yeah, we're all down there just prepping, getting ready.
What makes Wimbledon different then to other Grand Slams?
Well, I think the fact that it's played at a tennis club, you know, that is what's special about it. You know, a lot of the, and I don't just mean like the Grand Slams, but most of the tennis tournaments we play around the year, it's kind of purpose built, like, you know, stadiums, to, you know, to host a tennis tournament. Whereas, you know, this operates as a club all year round, and it's a place that, like I said, I spend a lot of time during the year. You don't do that at any of the other Grand Slams. They don't work like that. So, for me, that is what makes it different, and what makes it special.
It is very unique. It is certainly special. How do you think Wimbledon is viewed around the world?
Well, I think it's viewed as being one of the biggest sporting events out there. Pretty much anywhere that I've been, when Wimbledon is on, you know, it is on the TV everywhere. I think even, you know, people that aren't necessarily tennis fans know exactly what Wimbledon is and what it means. And for me, it's one of the biggest events on the sporting calendar.
Well, great to hear there from two-time Wimbledon champion, the legend that is Andy Murray, who is very familiar with our next location. So we have migrated on the grounds of Wimbledon. We now find ourselves underneath Centre Court's Champions Balcony, decked beautifully in pink and purple and white foliage. This is where you see the players appear after winning the championship. So they're usually greeted by a packed out crowd. Hundreds will squeeze into this space, which at this stage of the tournament in the first week is actually a bit of a crossroads, as it's kind of sandwiched between the main bulk of the outside courts, number three court, and then several layers of hospitality, which I'm sure Rob will find a way
well,
flagging into.
We'll be in there later. For me, I've never been to Wimbledon before, and it's a bit like, the only thing I can compare it to, it's like a festival, but just for sports lovers and tennis lovers. And walking down here for the first time, having watched it so many years on the television, it's a bit like, I don't know if you've ever been on a, you know, when you get toured around like a film set and the studios. I went to the Coronation Street tour, and it's a bit like that, but for people who love tennis. So you walk around, you go, oh, that's such and such, that's over there. So I'm loving it.
Yeah. You mentioned there some of the VIPs, and I've already said we're right next to one, two, three, four layers, I think, of hospitality. Mm. But actually, I think one of the things that makes Wimbledon so iconic is the ability to join the queue at 4:30, do the hard yards, then get your entrance to possibly onto one of the show courts, but if not, the outside courts, as I've just mentioned here. And Lindsay, I think this is what I love most about this Grand Slam in particular. You are so close to these tennis players. You can hear them grunting just metres away from you when they're slapping the ball on the outside courts here, and especially in the first week, it's an amazing atmosphere, isn't it?
It is, and the outside courts, you get so close. You can hear the instructions from the coaches, you hear the players getting annoyed sometimes, the jubilation at others. It is one of those events where you can get up close. It isn't where you're kept at arm's length by any means. And I think if you're lucky enough to get a ticket for court one or centre court, you'll also experience that you feel very much on top of that court. I think you watch sometimes on televisions around the world and you feel like it's huge. It was only my first experience this year of actually going in to watch as a punter like everybody else. And I couldn't believe it. I could not believe how close you feel to that action. And you have to be so, so quiet. Everyone's on best behaviour, and there's just an etiquette as well, isn't there, around Wimbledon? Everyone knows, they buy into that. The line calls, the way that you have the replays and everyone's chanting, wanting to see if it's in or out, it's all a bit of theatre. And it's actually I think, developed over recent years to be more of a theatre. I know other sports have really tried to do shorter versions to attract the younger audiences, whereas tennis has stayed quite firm to its tradition, but there is still, there's still a lot that everyone gets involved with in a spectator part.
I mean, you can hear from the buzz around us, despite the rain here today, Wimbledon's still absolutely packed out. And we've mentioned we're right under the balcony, the Champions balcony here at Centre Court, which you may well have seen on the TV or photos on social media. Speaking of the iconic location for a photo here at Wimbledon, if you have been or are planning a trip to London, we would love to see your pictures and videos. Plus, hear any of your travel hints and tips. You can follow Sport24 on Facebook and Instagram using the hashtag MySport24, or why not let us know what makes your city a sporting city through Twitter. You can send us your thoughts using the hashtag MySport24 using @Sport24Live. And speaking of travel hints and tips, Rob, you're the man when it comes to giving listeners the best tips about our chosen city. Whether that be places to grab a pre-match drink, have a bite to eat, or simply somewhere you just have to visit. So it's time for our London tourist top five.
Right, I'm going to start with one, which is a bit of an obvious one, but I think you will appreciate it, you especially. And it's going to be just a tour of Wembley Stadium. Now, it is the home of football. We can say about football grounds all around the country. We can say about football grounds all around the world. But Wembley, the famous arches, is exactly where you need to be. So number five has got to be a little tour of Wembley Stadium. Fair?
I think that's very fair. I think it's the most famous football stadium in the world, arguably. There'll be other people saying the Maracanã or something like that, but I think Wembley Stadium, it's got the history, it's steeped in that, but it's had all the big competitions.
So, number four, I'm going to revert to type. Now, we always tend to go on about, I mean, you're supposed to really go heavy with the food recommendations. These are just my little thing, do you know what I mean? When it comes to going anywhere, it's all about the food for me. A place for brunch, okay? So, I'm saying, just outside of London, if you're coming for a couple of days, get yourself to Crouch End, and there's a place called Beam. Now, when I lived in London, we used to go there all the time, and I don't know what it is, but it's like they've been sent down from on high to make eggs for us that will change your life for the better. It is one of the best places that you will ever put food into your mouth and into your belly. Give it a go. This is not in any way sponsored by this restaurant, but if they do want to get involved, slide in my DMs.
Can I add on to that as well, the Breakfast Club, because they do the brunches as well, and there's so many, just in case people can't get to Crouch End, because there are so many of the Breakfast Clubs all over London.
Okay, number three, you've got to, if you're coming to London, go and see a show. Now, there are many different ones. I know it's a subject that's very close to your heart. I've seen loads of different things over the years. You can get cheap tickets if you go online just before you get here, especially if you're going to go really late on towards just before showtime. Going to see a show in the West End is arguably one of the greatest things you can do in London. We'll go straight in again at number two with another food recommendation, this time in Soho, and it's a Vietnamese place called K Tre. I can only describe their food as divine. The tastes do naughty things to me. It gives me a tingling feeling deep inside my stomach, which I can't put into words. Even though it's my job to talk for a living, the food is exceptional. I started going there, this won't surprise you, because they had a bit of a deal on. It was like two courses for a certain amount of price, and being quite a famous budget person, I was all over it. And then I went that many times that the manager came over to me, this is a true story, and said, "You come here a lot, would you like a discount card?"
Oh.
And I could have married him there and then on the spot.
Discount on discount,
exactly,
Rob.
We're loving life. And at number one, for me, I've had a lot of very special memories going to the top of Primrose Hill. Obviously, the area all around there is fantastic. It's a beautiful place to be when the sun is shining, the view that you can get from the top of there. Again, I like a bargain, and the fact you don't have to pay obviously makes it that bit special. But just being there and seeing all of London in its splendour is, for me, number one.
Jude Law and Kate Moss live around there as well, so you can do some
celeb
spotting.
If that's not a reason to go, then I don't know what is. So there we have it, Rob's London tourist top five. Well, we've spoken about tennis, and now it is time to speak about the UK's biggest sport, whose governing bodies call London home. I'm talking about football and the national stadium, Wembley.
Plays it through, left footed to Ollie Watkins, who will pick his spot in the corner.
And Danny Welbeck's there to meet his knockdown.
Left footed effort carried by the goalkeeper, only into the path of Callum Wilson, who will turn it into the empty net.
And it's turned in by Nkunku. and Chelsea have got their equaliser.
Well, I don't think it's any coincidence that Wembley Stadium has already cropped up a few times. It has legendary status when we're looking at sporting arenas in London, doesn't it? But what do you think, Lindsay, makes it the home of football?
I think there's so much that goes into this. I mean, the fact that it's got 90,000 seats and it's one of the largest stadiums, but I think it's the showpiece occasions and that history that we've spoken about before. It's hosted the FA Cup final since 1923. It's hosted every major final, so the World Cup in 1966. We had the Euros very recently with the women won there in 2022. There was Euro 2020, Euro 96 as well, which we all hark back to when we hosted the Euro again in 2020 as well for some of those memories. So you look at that Champions League finals, I've attended Champions League finals there. I think it's seen as that special winning place. So if you're a footballer, you want to tick that off. You want to have played at Wembley, you want to have won at Wembley, and that's what makes it really special.
Located in North London, you often spot the Wembley Arch, don't you, Rob, as you're heading towards. It can be seen from quite a distance, yeah. Actually.
That is one of those things where if you don't live in London and you're coming into London on the train, you think, how far are we away? As soon as you see that Wembley Arch from the distance, you know you're never too far away. And as well, it's not just, in my experience, it's not just the top-end clubs that are competing in the FA Cup final or like the international tournaments that you mentioned. For a lot of people all around the UK, it's a big moment. It's like a pilgrimage, isn't it, when it comes to the playoff finals and all those kind of things.
Yeah, and that arch now lights up on different occasions. We've seen that during COVID. They did that for the NHS here, showing support. We've seen it several times, actually, that they've used that and the colours for LGBTQ plus months. So it's fantastic that they use it in that capacity. Also, you think of the old Wembley, and there were the famous, very old white twin towers that were demolished, and it needed something just as iconic. And I think people now probably have even forgotten about that, and they just think about the Wembley Arch.
Yes, so that is the home of football as it's known, but dotted around Wembley, 13 London football clubs, which is what makes the derbies, the London derbies, so spicy, hey?
It really is. Again, we were talking about this just a few minutes ago. For me, not being from London, you think that all the teams in London will be rivals with each other, but that's not the case, is it?
You try and unpick this, and I've just got to say that apart from the North London derby, where you think, well, that's geographical, that makes sense, a lot of them don't make sense. You'd expect Brentford sitting very close to Chelsea, that would be a rivalry, but it really isn't that bad. And Fulham's that side of West London as well, and they don't really get involved. I think everyone pretty much likes Fulham. But then you see West Ham and Spurs not getting on, and then the Chelsea-Spurs rivalry, it feels like Spurs have got lots of rivals. If you do come down, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is well worth a visit. That has to be one of my favourites now in world football. But yes, Spurs, I don't know why. They seem to have so many London rivals compared to others.
Can I give you my two favourite London stadiums? Then they're not going to be the obvious ones.
Go on.
Selhurst Park. I went there late in the season in 2022. And what a place that is.
Atmosphere there is incredible.
Proper stadium in the centre of somewhere, surrounded by different houses. That, for me, is proper football.
I will go on record to say I think that's one of the loudest Premier League experiences you'll have if you go and see Crystal Palace in action. They've got a strange rivalry, though. They're rivals with Brighton, who are not in London.
And my other favourite is Fulham.
Well, Fulham is everyone's because of the wooden seats.
Yeah.
The positioning, I know that I'm looking at Emma, I know she would like the positioning on the river. You seem like the sort of person that would like to have a stroll along the Thames before going to the football.
You know me too well, Lindsay. But you're right, and it's a ground that's steeped in history, because the other thing about these London clubs, many of them like West Ham, London Stadium, the Emirates, who home Arsenal, these are brand new state-of-the-art facilities, but there's something about going to Fulham and sitting in those wooden seats and you think of all the football that's been watched there over the years. It's quite something. But again, as I mentioned there, the contrast of these brand new stadiums as well.
Well, you mentioned those clubs and those new stadiums. In my time reporting in Premier League football, I have seen the transition. So I saw when the Emirates Stadium first opened and Arsenal moved there from Highbury, all of the money was ploughed in. If you remember, Arsene Wenger was behind this. He designed parts of this stadium. It's incredible, really, how involved he got. And so when that opened, it was the next biggest stadium in Europe. You know, everyone was going to go there. And then I saw the Berlin Ground, which is the old Upton Park, close down. And then West Ham relocated to the London Stadium. That's happened in the time that I've been working on that patch. And finally, the Spurs Stadium. You know, we talk about White Hart Lane and now the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And it had to have that one one-upmanship on Arsenal in terms of the seating. It had to be bigger. And they were meant to have a cheese room, Emma, which is another thing that I think we would have both enjoyed. But they didn't go ahead with the cheese room in the end. But they have got a tunnel where you can get a pass and watch all the players before they come out. It's a really nice experience to go and do that because you don't get to see those behind the scenes very often.
So they haven't got that at Selhurst Park?
No, I'm sorry, but they do have that raucous crowd.
Okay, so. Yeah, fair enough.
I think when you look at England as a country, there's kind of hubs or football cities. So you've got Merseyside, where Liverpool and Everton are, and then Manchester, the Midlands. But in London, to have seven Premier League sides as well, there's so much opportunity to watch world-class football.
Yeah, and often you can pick up tickets. It feels impossible because if you spoke to people in England, they would say they've been on waiting lists to get season tickets, but there is always an allocation. And actually, we've spoken about Fulham already. Fulham, Brentford, they're great clubs to start with. If you're coming here, you can probably get a ticket at quite short notice to be able to go and watch one of those games. And of course they all play the big teams, so Manchester United will be in town, Liverpool will be in town at some point, and if you can get to experience one of those matches or even see the likes of Erling Haaland when Manchester City are in London, if you get to see him up front and close, it's incredible. I think it's worth the ticket fee alone just to see a player like him.
And two-time European champions Nottingham Forest though.
Oh, yeah, Rob, I mean, we're trying, aren't we, to get them in to the show somehow.
It wouldn't be a Sport 24 podcast without mentioning that.
Thank you.
Now, we have changed location. That rumbling sound you may have heard in the last segment wasn't thunder. It was, in fact, Rob's tummy. So we have moved to the strawberries and cream tent, which is also just a matter of yards of the gate you reach when you get to the front of the Wimbledon queue. Lindsay, something you're very familiar with as a reporter here. I imagine you found some fascinating stories speaking to people in line.
Yes, it is a job in its own right. So if you're doing the queue, you start earlier than everyone else and you finish earlier than everyone else, but your whole shift is spent going up and down the queue finding those stories, Emma. So I've done that quite a few times, meeting people from all over the world. You have people coming from Hong Kong, Australia, all over, and they will camp, and there are what I would call more experienced queue goers at Wimbledon that know exactly what to bring. So they've got all of their picnic gear, they've got comfy tents, they've got mattresses, some of them, in their tents, so that they know that they get a comfier night's sleep. It's all about the pillow as well. So many people tell me, bring a good pillow and
then you're fine. What happens to your mattress when you get inside the gates though?
I don't know how they get them in, but they do. In fact, I spoke to a gentleman this morning who's been coming for 25 years. He does a week in the queue. He's got a mattress in the tent to make it more comfortable, but he also brings down what's effectively a tourer car where he hangs up all of his outfits for the week. They're all ironed and just pristine. And when I spoke to him, you'd think that he'd walked in and lived around the corner and had a lovely hot bath in the morning, but he's not. So some people know, they give up a few tips as well along the way. It is its own festival atmosphere. So there is music sometimes. They've got games that people play at different junctures of the queue. A lot of people ask me, how does it work when you get to the front? So you get a different colour-banded system. The nearer to the front of the queue you are, of course, the more likely you're going to get on centre court. As you go further back, that becomes court one. Outside court's just ground tickets. And then sometimes you see people swapping because they came to see a specific player. For instance, this year you might have seen some orange carrots around. They're big fans of Yannick Sinner. That's all they want to do is follow him around. You have just as many fanatics when it comes to Djokovic and Coco Gauff, for instance. People come because they want to follow their favourite players as well. People can turn up on the day, so you don't have to camp overnight if you don't want to, and you still manage to get through. And then there are resale tickets that usually are handed in the afternoon sessions, so people can still go, and the queues for that are really short, actually. You don't have to queue as long as you do to get in at the first point of call. And it means that you can go potentially onto court one, court two, as people have left and left their seats behind. It's a great system that Wimbledon have got to try and get people to experience as much as possible throughout the course of the 2 weeks.
Well, the bulk of this episode has been coming to you from SW19, the Wimbledon Championships. And for bat and ball enthusiasts, the fun doesn't stop here in London, as it's home to two iconic cricket grounds. North of the river, you have the home of cricket, the world famous Lords, and south, the Oval, where Surrey and England cricketer Sam Curran plays his cricket.
I'll start with the obvious one then, Sam. For you, London as a sporting city, where does it rank? London is a sporting city. I'd probably say right up there, having obviously had the luxury of playing at the Oval, which is my home ground, which is obviously very special. I play my county cricket there at Surrey, which is obviously one of the best grounds, I think, in the world. Maybe a little bit biased, but I guess, yeah, it's pretty special in terms of a cricketing venue, London, as well. For me, obviously, Lords, with all the history, all the tradition. You saw the Ashes game that's played there is obviously can get quite tasty. Lords is generally a crowd where it's quite a traditional, respectful crowd. And I guess there's times where you play at Lords and it's pretty calm, and then you go to the Oval, which is pretty lively and a bit more music and a bit more of the Barmy Army, stuff like that. So, yeah, for me, it's probably right up there, I guess. But there's also obviously other places in the world that are really cool.
There'll be people listening to this podcast from all over the world and they might not be up to date on the cricket. But for people who are new to cricket, Sam is arguably, and I don't mean to make you blush at this moment, Sam, but one of the greatest cricket players that are playing the sport at this moment in time. You mentioned there, you touched on it, there's a couple of different cricket grounds in and around London. You mentioned Lords and you mentioned the Oval. You touched on the differences between the two. For you, as someone who has loved cricket since you could walk, what is it like when you first step out at Lords? Can you describe that feeling?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I'm probably a little bit biased. That Oval's probably my favourite ground, being a home ground and having played there so many times. But I managed to play a few games for England at Lords, which is incredibly special. As a young kid, like you said, my dream was obviously to play for England and play at Lords. You hear about all the history and all the great players that have played there in the past, but you don't really know what they mean until you turn up to Lords, where you turn up, you walk through the long room, which is obviously a very historic room in the cricketing world, and I guess it's where all the members pack it out. When you kind of walk down from the dressing room, you have to walk through all the members onto the field, and when you get onto the Lords field, it's almost like a coliseum almost, where it's like a absolute picture. The grass is in unbelievable condition, the small things like that, and it's known for its great lunches as well. So when we play at Lords, the boys do, especially on days where maybe more in a test match when it's a batting day and you don't have much to do, you kind of get stuck into the desserts and stuff like that at Lords, because it's known when you look at the fixture list, and if you've got Lords, the boys always get a bit excited. But it's a very different ground, I'd say, to any other place in the world, because I think the respect and history towards that ground is obviously always going to be there. And I know that the Barmy Army aren't really allowed it, which the Barmy Army, for people that don't know, is obviously our biggest kind of support fan group that kind of tours around with England, and they're actually not really allowed at Lords, and they've got the famous trumpeter who kind of plays all the songs for the boys when we walk out into our games and stuff. So I guess that just shows how respectful and historic Lords is, and I think it's pretty special. It's quite a hard thing to explain until I guess you walk out onto the field. It's got a little slope as well, which it's very famous for. Again, you don't realize how big the slope on the pitch is until you actually walk out there.
Someone once described it to me as like going to the poshest wedding that you've ever been to. Can you talk us through the spread?
Well, I guess normally at a cricket match, it's kind of like we have come off for lunch or something, and you walk off and you kind of get a buffet style and you kind of just take what you need. Some guys like to eat a lot of food. You get your carbs and stuff as sportsmen. You got to eat pretty carefully. But when it comes to Lords, you kind of walk into the restaurant, and it's kind of like a sit down 3-course meal in the middle of a test match, which I guess you won't get anywhere else in the world. You obviously have your starters, and then you get onto your normal mains. But the dessert is pretty good. There's normally a bit of ice cream or a bit of sticky toffee pudding.
Oh,
so the boys don't hold back, I must say.
Even if you're injured for that one, I bet you still make the team. I bet you still travel with the squad for that one.
Yeah. You've got to be saying to the physio, I come up for rehab, I'll do anything to get there.
Let's talk about your favourite sporting memories then, if that's okay. Obviously, you're a massive cricket fan, that kind of goes without saying. What is your one memory of sporting action at Lords that you'll never forget?
I guess favourite memory of Lords, as a fan watching the World Cup, when England won the World Cup, that was pretty incredible, with the whole drama of, I guess, Ben Stokes and Jofra Archer, all that kind of stuff. for people that don't know, it was a tie, and then I guess England gone to win the Super Over, or tie the Super Over, then win the game. So it is, that was an incredible memory. I'm sure anyone that was there would have said the exact same thing. I guess personal memory, I've had a couple of good, we had a good win there against, I guess, India. But yeah, I guess it's more the team memories that you remember rather than your personal accolades. I guess I'm not on the honours boards yet, which I know is obviously a dream of most players. When you get 100 or 5 wickets, you go on a historic board there. So I guess it's just a ground that's incredibly special, and we're very lucky to be able to play there.
And what about the Oval?
The Oval memories, obviously being a home ground, played there so many times. I got my first 5 for England there against Sri Lanka, which was obviously incredibly special. Is a term, obviously, when you take 5 wickets in, I guess, one game, to be able to get it on my home ground in front of all my family and friends, which was, those are the days I guess you dream of, as doing really well in front of your loved ones, so who have helped you along the way. What else? At the Oval, won an Ashes Test match there, which was again incredibly special to draw the series 2-2 from 2-1 down, which was very special. I think it's all those nights playing for Surrey and the T20 Blast in front of all the crowds. We've had some amazing wins there. Yeah, to be fair, being at home ground and playing there so much, there's so many memories. But I think the one that probably stands out for me is my maiden 5 for England.
Let's say that someone comes to visit you in London and they've never been to the city before. You can't take them to the cricket, but they want to go and see a sporting event. Where are you taking them?
I'm a Chelsea football fan, so I'd probably say get down to Stamford Bridge. Obviously, they're not playing well, I guess. Chelsea, they're going through the ups and downs, but I guess go down to Stamford Bridge, great part of London, just around Chelsea, great bars, great restaurants. Put a football in, head to a pub in town, which is obviously a great area. So that would probably be my top sporting event around London. Obviously, there's some other amazing football stadiums. You've obviously got Tottenham, Arsenal, not them, fans of them. So I'd recommend Chelsea.
This episode is coming from Wimbledon. I've seen photographs of you visiting Wimbledon in 2023 in the most fantastic suit. What's Wimbledon like for people that have not been? What's it like in your opinion?
Yeah, I think I'm lucky enough to have been to Wimbledon a couple of times. I think Wimbledon's very unique in terms of a sporting event. I've always said every time you go to Wimbledon, it's a pretty special occasion, obviously, to be able to watch high quality tennis, which is a great sport to watch live when you feel so close to the action. It's a day, I guess, where you can dress up and be a lot smarter than probably most sporting events. The dress code there is obviously pretty smart. I do enjoy my fashion, so it's kind of, I guess, being able to go to those days and put a tie on when I'm used to just being in sports goods, quite a nice feeling. But yeah, I think it's incredibly special. It's got a great vibe. You've got the loads of, like, I guess, parks of people enjoying a few pims and kind of in an area where everyone's just enjoying a good day out. In the Wimbledon Village, where the tennis is, an amazing place as well. Got great restaurants, bars, cafes. I'm sure if anyone's been there, they'll know what I mean by it's not your typical raucous kind of sporting event where there's loads of chanting and stuff like that. It's quite a sophisticated, respectful place, I'd say, which is it's why it's, I guess, so unique.
2023 is going to be a massive year for Sport 24 because we're going to be showing the Rugby World Cup and the ICC World Cup. But the T20 World Cup was in 2022. Sam, obviously that was a fantastic tournament for you. Player of the tournament?
Yeah, it was, like you said, obviously incredible memories. Feels like quite a long time ago in a way. But yeah, it was an incredibly special tournament for myself and I guess for the team to be able to call myself a World Cup winner is pretty special because obviously not many people can do that. To be able to do it in Australia, which was a long tournament as well. We lost quite early in the group stages against Ireland, which was quite a big upset and I guess a wake-up call for us. But yeah, to beat India in the semi-final, I think we're in Adelaide, which was it was a full house of Indian fans. So it was kind of like a lot of pressure on us there. And then, yeah, on to the final in Melbourne at the MCG, Melbourne Cricket Ground, which holds about 100,000 people, was pretty incredible. And then to be able to, we performed really well on the final and kind of to lift that trophy with all your mates, and I guess it's a feeling you can't really describe. And it's kind of such elation, and almost all the hard work comes down to one game, and we managed to hold our nerve, and yes, incredible memories and incredibly special. So when you win a World Cup, I think there's no better feeling. But to be able to do that with, I guess, people you've grown up with in a way and played a lot of county stuff with was pretty cool. So yeah, incredibly grateful, and fingers crossed it's the first of many World Cups.
Yeah, how do you think the players are going to be feeling building up to the World Cup in 2023? What do you think that's going to be like?
Yeah, again, it's going to be incredible. It's in India. It's going to be incredibly special, tough place to play. It's a 50-over format where England won that in 2019. So going back there as reigning champions would be, going back there as the holding the cup would be pretty special. 50 overs is obviously a different format where you play every team in the World Cup in one game. So it's kind of one big group, which is a different format, which I actually quite like, in terms of you get to play everyone rather than being in a group stage. Then like the Rugby World Cup, I guess, as some may say, the ones group's going to be a bit stronger. So I guess it's going to be a tough place to go. And 50 overs is a longer format, different strategies. So yeah, the guys are going to be really excited, and fingers crossed we can go back to back.
Just before you go, can we have, Sam, your one tip of place that someone's got to visit, be that a cafe, be that a restaurant? Where's your go-to place?
Oh, go-to cafe, restaurant. There's a place in just off the King's Road by Sloane Square, Pavilion Road, which is like just off the King's Road in Chelsea, where there's a place called Granger & Co. I go quite a lot, which is... it's actually an Australian restaurant, I think. Got great coffees, great food as well, and got a great ice cream shop just outside as well. So you can sneak in there for a bit of dessert. But I'd probably say that's my go-to. But London's such a great place for that type of thing. So I'd probably say anywhere, really.
And is it nicer than the Lord's Sticky Toffee?
Well, I don't think it's anything nicer than getting a couple of wickets for England and then walking off and treating yourself to a bit of sticky toffee. So I'd probably say no, but sticky toffee is probably my favourite dessert. So anywhere that serves that has to happen.
Sam, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Cheers, guys. Thank you very much. And catch up soon.
Well, good to hear from Sam Curran there and get his experiences of what it's like to play cricket across London, whether that be at Lord's or at the Oval. Two quite different crowd experiences. And another London stadium full of tradition and history is Twickenham, the home of English rugby. We've been speaking to Johanna Byrne, Head of Business Development at Twickenham.
Johanna, thank you so much for your time. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
You're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Before we kind of get into it then, can you just, for people that aren't necessarily rugby fans but are fans of sport, can you just explain just Twickenham's place in the home of English rugby?
Absolutely. Twickenham Stadium, it is the home of English rugby. It's been here since 1907, and it's also home of the Rugby Football Union, which sets the laws and the competitions and the structure of the game in England as well. So yeah, it's a magnificent stadium in southwest London.
For you, you must have seen some properly iconic moments in the sport over the years that you've worked there and just being a fan as well.
Absolutely. They're usually, you know, the sporting calendar, internationals are usually set around the Six Nations, which is February, March, and the Autumn Internationals, which is November. So it's usually nice and chilly here. But I think what I always remember is when we have those matches in the sunshine, and that is the Premiership final here, which takes place in May or June. And this year we have some summer matches as well leading into the World Cup. So for me, actually being able to see fans in the white England tops and the sea of whites throughout, I think it's so rare to see that because we're usually wrapped up in winter months. but yeah, I think that really brings this stadium alive. And nighttime kickoffs as well, when we can get the fireworks going and really make a big occasion of it.
Favourite moment for you?
There's so many. A long, long time ago, and I think it was probably... I'm talking about a Martin Johnson, Jonah Lamu reunion match here back in 2003, 2004, for me, that stood out. And the build-up to the 2003 World Cup, I'm showing my age here, but all that build-up was phenomenal. But there's been so many, so many. And my parents are Irish, so again, I've seen some Ireland wins here as well. But my head is England on those days as well. It's a win-win situation for me sometimes.
Exactly. That's what people say when they're on a sit on the fence, isn't it? That's always a nice place to be. I really want to talk to you about the traditions at Twickenham as well, because we hear a lot about the car park picnics, the fan zones, everything that goes on around the stadium. It's not something that you see much in other sports in England, is it, the car park picnics?
It's not, and it has changed slightly due to, you know, new barriers and security and things like that. But coming to Twickenham isn't just coming to a match, it's an occasion. For some people, it's a one-off occasion in their life. And they very much, you know, the gates open at Twickenham here. Three and a half hours before a match, we have queues. We can have 20, 30,000 people coming in here to soak up the atmosphere, to really take in the history and the momentous occasion of coming to history, of coming to Twickenham. So, yeah, it's a full-on occasion. And because of that, we have the West Fan Village now, which has evolved into a wonderful occasion on its own, to be honest. Our brilliant partners have massive installations out there, really getting people in, enjoying rugby, enjoying what we're all about. Live music. We've had everyone from Craig David, Sophie Ellis-Bextor, out in the fan village, building up that occasion. So we're saying to people, you know, get here early, enjoy the fantastic street food, the whole occasion, the music and the atmosphere. And as well, you know, and it eases as well. There's lots of reasons we want to do that, but it also eases the crowd all rushing in, you know, 20 minutes before a match. So for many people, they travel from all over the world to come to a match here. And especially our overseas visitors as well, they get here early and really soak up that atmosphere three and a half hours before kickoff.
Let's say you've got the day off, but you're going to an event at Twickenham and your friends are coming to see you. You're planning the perfect day for them. Where are you stopping off on the way?
Oh, wow. There's lots of things. I had friends actually who were over from New Zealand last year, and I met them in Church Street in Twickenham. And then we joined the crowds and we strolled up towards Twickenham and then into the fan village, you know, experiencing brilliant live music, all the build up, watching the coaches arrive. But they really wanted to get into the stadium. But yeah, we're lucky enough at Twickenham. We're in southwest London. We have the River Thames flowing through it. It's a really picturesque part of the world. So actually anyone arriving here, you know, you've got the cobbled streets of Twickenham. You've got Richmond nearby as well. It's all really lovely for people to experience. You know, a lot of people get the tube to Richmond and walk along the river to Twickenham. And, you know, for so many people, that, again, is a really lovely occasion to be able to do that. And then walk through the town centre to the stadium. And you see the stadium rising up. We are in the middle of a suburban area. You see it rising up between the houses. And hopefully that fills people, gets people inspired and buzzing for the day as well.
With Twickenham, obviously a lot of people know it for the rugby, because obviously, as we mentioned, it's the home of rugby. But so much more that happens there that some people might not know about, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, that's what my job is. We're bringing the stadium alive 365 days of the year. The RFU profits of our events here and the commerciality of the stadium go back into the grassroots game. So it's a really wonderful journey. For us, we do over 1,000 non-match day events here a year. And that's everything from conferences, events, dinners, parties, pitch side barbecues. Actually, anyone and everyone's welcome to come in here and use this huge asset for their own purpose, whether it is a corporate event or a private celebration. We're also licensed for weddings. So again, you know, it's opening the doors to the stadium on that non-match day. We also host concerts here a year. We just had Depeche Mode here a couple of weeks ago, who, again, have a massive European following, but also still here in the UK. And again, we've just had things like golf on the pitch as well. We've transformed our pitch into a golf course. So, you know, the idea is we have this asset. You know, stadiums are fantastic connectivity, access, parking, you know, they're full of history and legacy as well. So they should be used, and we really maximise that opportunity here at Twickenham. So, and along with that, you can have as much rugby or as little as possible. We have the wonderful World Rugby Museum here, which is the largest collection of world rugby memorabilia in the world. It's fully interactive, so it's brilliant to add on to your day. And we offer stadium tours as well. So really, you know, you can come here because of the location, the parking, the facilities, or you can come here and say, actually, I'd like to have a meeting here or an offsite, or I should say a birthday celebration, a wedding celebration, and really just embrace what Twickenham has to offer.
The golf course idea is amazing. Where did that come from?
Sadly, I can't take all the credit on that.
You can, you're fine. No, it's okay.
We were approached, and again, because of our commerciality, you know, we are recognised in the industry and we have wonderful contacts out there. And we were approached by Stadium Golf Tour, who are US-based. They've been doing this across the US. And they came to us, and we really made that happen. And it was the first for Twickenham. I had to find a very small window that we could use a hallowed turf, and it was before a concert. And we worked with a great team there and pulled that. So again, it was 9 holes on the course. And yeah, we welcomed clients over 4 of the hottest days of the year so far. but yeah, it just kind of opened up the stadium to people who perhaps hadn't been here before, and hopefully they will return. So that's what all our ticketed events are about. It's about reaching out to an audience who may not have come to the rugby or may not want to, but they have this stadium around. And so all of our ticket events, we call them homegrown events, they work really well for attracting a new audience.
Joanna, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
No problem at all. It's been brilliant chatting. Hopefully I've enlightened you all about Twickenham.
Now, we are coming towards the end of this episode, but we can't sign off without mentioning the spine of the city, the River Thames. Weaving from Gloucestershire in the west, across southern England, through London, past iconic sites such as the London Eye and the Houses of Parliament, and eventually out to the Thames Estuary and the North Sea. And once a year in the capital, it plays host to one of the most famous boat races in the world.
Hi, I'm Sarah Winkless, Cambridge Blue for rowing, and I got to be the first woman to umpire the men's boat race. If you hear people referring to the boat race, they're probably talking about the Oxford and Cambridge boat race. If you go to the Tideway on that day, you'll watch 4 races. You'll watch the women's boat race, and that's the top women athletes from both universities. They've been training all year to race from Putney to Mortlake, 4.25 miles down that stretch. After that, you see the women's reserve. The third race that day is Goldie Isis. That's the men's reserve boat. They race, and a half an hour later, you see the men's blue boat racing. So 4 races, 1 course, and the month we're talking about is April or maybe March, depending on the tides and the date.
Are you ready? Go!
The men's boat race in London is something I'd always been to. I remember taking to that as a child. It was obviously part of my family history. Both my dad and my stepdad had been part of that, and we'd go and watch for the banks. And the year I remember the most was the year that I actually got to Cambridge, and I thought, I wasn't a rower, and I thought maybe next year I might know someone in the boat race. I might know somebody who's actually competing on this course. And of course, a few years later, I got to race it and got to umpire it. As a course, it really is unique. I think it's brilliant. You could not design it, but you got the sense of how big the river is, how small you feel as an athlete in that, and actually how rough it can be. We weren't on sinking conditions at all, although we have seen those in races. But with my first few strokes, I thought, am I blade clashing? Because it was so rough as my blade went through the wave. It felt I'd hit someone else's blade. The conditions were that solid. Those difficult conditions really do test your watermanship. And as an athlete, you know that that's what you've trained for and you're ready for. It makes it really special.
So the boat race and Henley Regatta, I think 2 big highlights of the rowing calendar. Though that being said, Lindsay, you by no means have to be an expert, do you, of rowing to appreciate both of them?
No, I certainly wasn't when I went along. There's always a gathering in an old haunt of mine in West London. I used to live near East Putney Tube Station. And once a year, everyone would flood out of those tube exits to go to the boat race because it was a really good spot down by Putney Bridge. So that's where I went down to watch it. That would be my tip. I know that a lot of people also go to Chiswick to go and watch it from there. The home of Anton Deck, if anyone knows who they are. They're big celebrities in the UK. But yeah, you can go and you don't need to know much about it. It's just really about who crosses that line first. Depends on which stretch of the river you're on. I didn't even know who won the year that I went to go and watch, but I loved it nonetheless.
I feel as if we've barely scraped the surface with all the sport catered for here in this amazing sporting city. But don't forget, you can see all the biggest sporting events live on Sport 24, from football to cricket, golf to the tennis, right here at Wimbledon. Just go to sport24live.com to see what's coming up next time you take to the air or are holidaying at sea. So it just leaves me to say a huge thank you to my guest, to Lindsay Hooper, for expertly guiding us around London, and to TikToker Rob Adcock for being my trusty travel companion.
It has been a pleasure. If you want to track down Rob, I think it's very easy. He's given you his location. He's always eating with his discount card in Soho. Good luck tracking me down with all those addresses.
And don't forget to subscribe via your favourite podcast provider to hear more of our trips to other sporting cities such as Melbourne, Madrid and Miami. We'll be back soon exploring other destinations including Paris and New York. But for now, you've been listening to me, Emma Saunders, and On Tour with Sport 24. Until next time, safe travels.